You are listening to CBC Radio 2.
Hello, I'm Stuart McLean, and this is The Vinyl Cafe. Lots to do on the show today. It's the beginning of December, and that means the beginning of the holiday season on the Vinyl Cafe, so there's all sorts of stuff to attend to over the next few weeks, and we're going to start attending to them today. To kick things off, we're going to play the turkey story in today's show. That's the story about the year Dave tried to cook the family turkey. It's the story that got us into this holiday routine, and we wouldn't let a holiday season pass without replaying it. After we play the turkey story, we're going to phone the winner of this year's Vinyl Cafe Christmas contest. We ask you to send us a postcard and tell us the worst present you've ever given or received. We said it didn't have to be a Christmas present. Any kind of present would do. Hanukkah, birthday, graduation, whatever. Well, we got a ton of mail, and we have a grand winner who are going to fly from their home in... Well, I'm not going to tell you where they live right now. You'll find out about that in about 40 minutes when we pick up the phone and call. And if you sent in a card, it would be helpful if you stayed off the phone so we don't get into one of those scenes like we did the year our winners were on the internet and we almost didn't get through. That was the year that Barb, the wonderful telephone operator from Kingston, Ontario, suggested we call a local pizza parlor in our winner's hometown and send a pizza to their house, along with a message that we were trying to get through. Anyway, like I said, we're going to call this year's winners in about 40 minutes. And when we do, we'll tell them we're going to fly them to Toronto and put them up in a fancy hotel. I think last year's winners stayed at the Holiday Inn. Well, this year, they're going to stay at the Metropolitan. And once they get here, we're going to give them front row center tickets to this year's Christmas concert, which we're recording at Convocation Hall in a few weeks, and a backstage pass and supper with a cast and crew before the show, and tickets to see the Arrogant Worms at Q's Room the next day, and an armful of the new Vinyl Cafe CDs and T-shirts and any other stuff we can rummage up. Our goal is to send them home with so much stuff they won't have to do any holiday shopping. So let's get going. A little music first, and then I think we'll announce some of our runners-up. In fact, I think I'll read a few of the postcards that came in. But first, here's the Pompey family with I'll See You There.
Dying
That was Vancouver's Susan and Terry Jacks, who were known as the Poppy Family when they recorded that tune. That was I'll See You There, a gem off the Poppy Family's 1971 vinyl record, Poppy Seeds. Okay, it's time now to announce some of the runners-up in this year's Christmas contest. We ask you to write in and tell us the worst gift you've ever given or received. Well, we read all of the entries. There were a lot of them. Cards came in from across the country, and we learned a lot about present giving in the process. I have a few of the cards I want to read for you right now. These are the runners-up. First one comes from Donald Hanula of Brockville, Ontario. Dear Stuart, writes Donald on a postcard of the Thousand Islands, the worst gifts I ever gave were tires. My wife's birthday falls on December the 24th, and the practical guy that I am, I thought that a pair of tires for my wife's birthday and a pair of tires for a Christmas gift the next morning would keep her safe. I haven't lived this down. It happened 15 years ago. P.S. We're still happily married, 40 years in 2005. That was from Donald Hanula of Brockville, Ontario. Donald, the Vinyl Cafe is going to be in Brockville on Saturday, December the 11th. That's next Saturday, I guess. So I'm going to set aside a pair of tickets for you and your wife to come to the show, and I'll look forward to seeing you there. Keith Firth Wilson of Victoria, B.C. sent us in a Royal British Columbia Museum postcard, and on it he said, Dear Vinyl Cafe, my worst gift I've ever received is a snore band. It has an elastic strap and two nose hooks in pink, and it's designed to control nasal profundus thunderundum and is approved by Dr. I. Nozitol, M.D. of the Post Nasal Institute. Hope to see you in December. Well, you didn't win the contest, Keith. You're a runner-up, and I'm going to send you a brand-new Vinyl Cafe CD. It's called A Storygram from the Vinyl Cafe, and we'll put that in the mail to you next week. Our next runner-up is also from British Columbia. Ralph Keller lives on Quadra Island in British Columbia, and he writes, Dear Stuart, I grew up in the small town of Duncan on Vancouver Island. In 1958, when I was just 5 years old, I was smitten by a rare, mysterious disease which baffled the local doctor, a rather elderly but kind family practitioner. After two visits of bloodletting for tests, on the third visit, I dug my hands deep into my pocket and refused to pull them out for the unpleasant prick on the finger. No amount of prompting or bribery from my mom could persuade me to present my hands to the doctor. As she lost patience, her bribes turned to threats, at which point the old gentleman held up his hand to silence her and turned to me and said, If you'll let me prick your finger just one more time, I'm going to give you a wonderful present. And then, taking me by the arm, he led me to an old white Philco refrigerator in his office. He opened the door to shelves stocked with vaccines and bottles and other strange medical paraphernalia, and then he reached down into the vegetable crisper and carefully slid it open. There, to my amazement, and I'm sure to my mother's, in an inch of water, surrounded by a few rocks, sat four large frogs. He told me I could have my pick. The kindly old doctor got his blood, I got my frog, which to my mother's dismay lived in our bathtub at home until she persuaded me to release it in the garden. That was from Ralph Keller of Quadra Island, British Columbia, Coast Mountain Expeditions, he writes. And what are we going to send Ralph for that? Ralph's a runner-up in our Christmas contest. That's what I'm doing right now, reading the runners-up that came in. We'll send him a copy of the Vinyl Cafe Diaries, the latest Vinyl Cafe book. Our next runner-up comes from Moose Jaw. Hi, Stuart, writes Sandy Kitts of Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. The worst present I gave three times. Our family drew names for Christmas gifts, and the gifts were supposed to be homemade, useful, and under $20. So each year, well before Christmas, I began to prepare my gift. For some reason, I was hooked, literally, on crochet. So I made hats. Although the wool was trendy, the hat shape was troubling due to difficulties with tension in the wool and me. The lucky recipient all three times was Trish, my sister. Thanks to her sensitivity, it wasn't until some years later, while sharing a cup of tea, that I admired her tea cozy. Laughing, she commented she had a collection of tea cozies. Three of them, in fact. Best damn cup of tea I ever had. That was from Sandy Kitts of Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Sandy, we're going to send you something homemade, useful, and costs under $20. You get the Vinyl Cafe Christmas Concert on CD. We'll put that in the mail next week. I think we got two more here. This one's from Lynn Laverty of Orangeville, Ontario. Dear Mr. McLean, this is in response to the worst gift I have ever received contest. It was Christmas 1986, and upon opening my Christmas stocking, I reached in and pulled out a certificate with my cemetery plot. I couldn't believe my eyes, but needless to say, it's made for interesting conversation and lots of laughs. I'm still married to the guy who gave it to me, my husband of 37 years. Enjoy your show. You do a great job. Have a great day. Lynn Laverty of Orangeville, Ontario. Well, Lynn lives in Orangeville. We're in Hamilton. We're doing a show in Hamilton this weekend on Sunday afternoon. Lynn's phone number is here. Lynn, I'm going to give you a call after the show. And if you want to come to the show in Hamilton, we'll be happy on Sunday afternoon. We'll put two tickets aside for you. If you don't want to do that, you can come to the Toronto show. On our grand winner, we're going to bring in on our hook. You'll have to get to Toronto yourself. But if you can make it here or to Hamilton, you can come to either of those shows. And I'll give you a call later on this afternoon. Jesse Bowles of Nestleton, Ontario is our next runner-up. Jesse wrote that one year I was thrilled to get an early Christmas present from my brother's family, our Christmas turkey. On December the 24th, I got the turkey from our freezer. What a surprise. They had mistakenly given us a turkey carcass, frozen for when they had had time to make turkey soup. That was from Jesse Bowles of Nestleton, Ontario. Jesse, will send you out a Vinyl Cafe CD for sending that in. And that's it for the runners-up. We're going to phone the grand winner of this year's contest in less than half an hour. Don't want to miss that, so don't go away. In the meantime, a little bit of country music. Nico Case just released a brand new live CD compiling recordings that she made at dives and speakeasies all across Canada. She covers Buffy St. Marie and Loretta Lynn on the album, as well as belting out tremendous versions of traditional Appalachian songs. This is Nico Case and the Idea City 03 Choir with Wayfaring Stranger, recorded live at the Isabel Bader Theater in Toronto.
I am a fool, wayfaring stranger, a traveling through this world below, but there's no fear or danger in that bright land to which I go. Thank you.
That was Nico Case with Wayfaring Stranger. It was taken from her brand new CD, The Tigers Have Spoken, which features, among others, Victoria's Carolyn Mark and Toronto country superstars, the Sadies. So what is it, 20 minutes before we phone this year's grand winner? And before we do that, it's that time of year again. Time to rerun the first Christmas story we ever had on the Vinyl Cafe. Time to go back to Glenn Gould's studio in December of 1996 when Dave tried to cook the family turkey. Last year when Carl Lobier bought his wife Gerda, Martha Stewart's complete Christmas planner, he did not understand what it was he was doing. On Christmas Eve, Carl found himself staring at a bag full of stuff that he couldn't remember buying. He wondered if he'd maybe picked up someone else's bag by mistake. And then he found a receipt with his signature on it. Why would he have paid $23 for a slab of metal to defrost meat when they already owned a microwave oven that would do it in half the time? Who could he possibly have been thinking of when he bought the AB machine? Although he did remember buying Martha Stewart's complete Christmas planner. It was a picture of Martha Stewart on the cover that had drawn him to the book. A picture of Martha striding across her front lawn with a wreath made of chili peppers tucked under her arm. Carl had never heard of Martha Stewart, but she looked like she was in a hurry, and that made him think of Gerda. So he bought the book, never imagining that it was something that his wife had been waiting for all her life. Carl was as surprised as anyone in the neighborhood last May when Gerda began the neighborhood Christmas group. Although not perhaps as surprised as Dave was when his wife Morley joined it. It's not about Christmas, Dave, Morley said. It's about getting together. The members of Gerda's group, all women, got together every second Tuesday night at a different house each time. They drank tea or beer, and the host baked something special, and they worked on stuff, usually until about 11. But that's not the point, said Morley. The point is getting together. It's about neighborhood, not about what we're actually doing, but there was no denying that they were doing stuff while they got together. It was May, and they were doing Christmas stuff. It's wrapping paper, said Morley. You're making paper, said Dave. We're decorating paper, said Morley. This is hand-painted paper. Do you know how much this would cost? That was July. In August, they took oak leaves and dipped them into gold paint and hung them in bunches from the kitchen ceiling. And then there was the stenciling weekend. The weekend Dave thought if he stood still too long, Morley would stencil him. In September, when no one could find an eraser anywhere in the house, Morley came home and she said, that's because I took them all with me. We're making rubber stamps. You're making rubber stamps, said Dave? Out of erasers, said Morley. People don't even buy rubber stamps anymore, said Dave. There were oranges drying on the clothes rack in the basement. There were blocks of wax for candles stacked on the ping pong table. And then one day, Morley said, do you know there's only 67 shopping days until Christmas? Now, Dave did not know this. Had not, in fact, completely unpacked from last summer's vacation. And without thinking, he said, what are you talking about? And Morley said, if we wanted to get all our shopping done by the week before Christmas, we only have, she shut her eyes, 62 days left. Now, Dave and Morley usually start their Christmas shopping the week before Christmas. And suddenly, there they were, with only 67 shopping days left, standing in their bedroom, staring at each other, incomprehension hanging in the air between them. It hung there for a good 10 seconds. And then Dave said something he'd been careful not to say for weeks. He said, I thought this thing wasn't about Christmas, which he immediately regretted saying. Because Morley said, don't make fun of me, Dave. And she left the room. And then she came back like a locomotive. Uh-oh, thought Dave. What, said Morley? I didn't say that, said Dave. You said, uh-oh, said Morley. I thought, uh-oh, said Dave. I didn't say, uh-oh. Thinking, uh-oh, isn't like saying, uh-oh. They don't send you to jail for thinking you want to strangle someone. What? Said Morley. She slept downstairs that night. And she didn't say a word when Dave came down and tried to talk her out of it. Didn't say a word the next morning until Sam and Stephanie had left for school. And then she said, "Do you know what my life is like, Dave?" Dave suspected correctly that she wasn't looking for an answer. "My life is a train," she said. "I'm a train dragging everyone from one place to another, to school and to dance class, and to now it's time to get up, and now it's time to go to bed. I'm a train full of people who complain when they have to go to bed and fight you when they have to get out of one. That's my job, because I'm not only the train, I'm the porter and the conductor and the cook and the engineer and the maintenance man, and I print the tickets and stack the luggage and clean the dishes, and if they still had cabooses, I'd be in the caboose so I could pick up everything after the train went by." Now, Dave didn't want to ask where the train was heading. He had the sinking feeling it was one of those Civil War trains, and that somewhere up ahead, someone had pulled up a section of the track. "You know where the train is heading?" said Morley. "Yep," thought Dave. "We're going off the tracks. Any moment now." "What?" said Morley. "I said no," Dave said. "I said I don't know where the train's going." Morley leant forward over the table. "It starts at a town called First Day at School, Dave. And it goes to a village called Halloween. And then through the township of Class Project, and down the spur line called Your Sister is Visiting. And you know what's at the end of the track? You know where my train's heading?" Dave looked at her kind of nervously. He didn't want to get the answer wrong. He would have been happy to say where the train was going if he knew he could get it right. Was his wife going to leave him? Maybe the train was going to D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Not at Christmas, he moaned. "Exactly," said Morley. "To the last stop on the line, Christmas dinner, and this is supposed to be something I look forward to, Dave. This is supposed to be a vacation." "Christmas dinner," said Dave, kind of tentatively. It seemed a reasonably safe thing to say at the moment. And Morley nodded, and feeling encouraged, Dave added, with a turkey and everything. But Morley wasn't listening to him. She said, "And when we finally get through that week between Christmas and New Year, you know what they do with the train? They back it up during the night when I'm asleep so they can run it through all the stations one more time. And you know who you are, Dave? You're the guy in the bar car pushing the button asking for another drink." And by the way Morley said that, Dave could tell that she still loved him. She didn't, for instance, say that he had to get off the train, or for that matter, even out of the bar car. But he did realize if he was going to stay aboard, he was going to have to join the crew. So the next weekend he said, "Why don't I do some of the Christmas shopping? Why don't you give me a list and I'll go and get some of the things for the Cape Breton cousins?" Now Dave had never gone Christmas shopping in September before. But when he came back, he said, "That was okay." And Morley said, "I'm sorry. It's just that I like Christmas so much. I used to like Christmas so much. And I was thinking, if I got everything done beforehand, maybe I could enjoy it again. I'm trying to make it fun again. I'm trying to get control of it. That's what all this is about." And Dave said, "Well, what else can I do?" And Morley looked at him and she said, "On Christmas Day, Dave, after we've opened the presents, I want to take the kids to work at the food bank. And I want you to look after the turkey." "I can do that," said Dave. Dave didn't understand until Christmas Eve, when the presents were finally wrapped and under the tree and he and Morley were snuggled in bed and he was feeling warm and safe there beside his wife, and he nudged her feet with his feet and she said, "Did you take the turkey out of the freezer?" And he went downstairs and couldn't find a turkey in the freezer, in either freezer, and was about to call out, "Where's the turkey anyway?" But stopped abruptly when the truth landed on him like an anvil, and he understood that looking after the turkey, something he had promised to do, meant buying it as well as putting it in the oven. He decided he'd wait downstairs for a while. And when he went back up, Morley was asleep, and he thought, "I could wake her."
Instead, he lay in bed and imagined in perfect detail the chronology of the Christmas day waiting for him. Imagined everything from the first morning squeal to the moment his family left to work at the food bank, and then that moment when they came home with his mother-in-law, who they would have picked up, all of them expecting turkey. Saw the look on his wife's face as she sat at her table with the homemade crackers and the gilded oak leaves as he carried a bowl of spaghetti across the kitchen. At 2 a.m., he was still awake. But at least he had a plan. He would wait until they left for the food bank, then he'd take off and go to some deserted Newfoundland outport and live under an assumed name. And at Sam's graduation, his friends would say, "Why isn't your father here?" And Sam would say, "One Christmas, he forgot to buy the turkey, so he had to leave." Then at 3, after rolling around for an hour, Dave got out of bed, dressed, and went looking for a 24-hour grocery store. It was either that or wait for the food bank to open. And though he couldn't think of anyone in the city who more in need of a turkey than he was, the idea that his family might spot him in line made that unthinkable. At 4 a.m. in the morning, on Christmas morning, with the help of a taxi driver named Mohammed, Dave found an open store and bought the last turkey there, 12 pounds, frozen as tight as a cannonball. Grade B, whatever that meant. He was home by 5 a.m., and by 6:30 had the turkey more or less thawed. He used an electric blanket and a hairdryer and a turkey and a bottle of scotch on himself. As the turkey defrosted, it became clear that the grade B part was the cosmetic part. The skin on the right drumstick was ripped. To Dave, it looked as if the turkey had made a break from the slaughterhouse and dragged itself a block or two before it was recaptured, beaten to death. This bird looked like it had died in a knife fight. Dave poured another scotch and began to refer to the turkey as Butch. If that had been the worst thing about the bird, that it was cosmetically challenged, Dave would have been happy. Would have considered himself blessed. Would have been able to look forward to this Christmas with equanimity. Might eventually have been able to laugh it off. The worst thing came later, after lunch, after Morley and the kids left for the food bank. Before they left, Morley dropped pine oil on some of the living room lamps. When the lamps heat the oil up, she said, "The house will smell like a forest." Then she said, "Mother's coming. I'm trusting you with this, Dave. You have to have the turkey in the oven." Dave finished her sentence for her. He said, "By 1:30, don't worry. I know what I'm doing." The worst thing began when Dave tried to turn on the oven. Morley had never had cause to explain to him about the automatic timer, and Dave had never had cause to ask about it. The oven had been set the day before to go on at 5:30, Morley had been baking a squash casserole for Christmas dinner, because she always does the vegetables the day before. And now, until the oven timer was unset, nothing anybody, least of all Dave, did was going to turn it on. At 3:30 in the afternoon, Dave retrieved the bottle of scotch from the basement and poured himself a drink. He knew he was in trouble. He had to find an oven that could cook the bird and cook it fast. But every oven he could think of had a turkey inside it already. Now, for 10 years, Dave was a technical director to some of the craziest acts on the rock and roll circuit, and he wasn't going to fall to pieces over a raw turkey. Inventors are often unable to explain where they get their best ideas from, and Dave is not too sure where he got his. Maybe he spent too many years in too many hotel rooms. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he topped up the scotch, and he phoned the Park Plaza Hotel, and he was given the front desk, and he said, "Do you cook special menus for people with special dietary needs?" "We're a first-class hotel in a world-class city, sir. We can look after any dietary needs." And Dave said, "If somebody brings their own food because it's on a special diet, would you cook it for them?" "Of course, sir." Dave looked at the turkey, lying on the counter like a naked baby. "Come on, Butch," he said, "we're going out." Morley had the car. Dave called a taxi. He stuffed the bottle of scotch in his pocket on the way out the door. "The Park Plaza," he said, "it's an emergency." He took a slug from the bottle in the back of the cab. The man at the front desk of the hotel asked if Dave needed help with the suitcases. "No suitcases," said Dave, then turned breezily to the man behind him in line and patted the turkey, which he had dropped on the counter and was spilling out of its plastic bag, and said, only slightly slurred, "Just checking in for the afternoon with my check." The clerk winced, and Dave turned, wobbled, and peered at the man in line behind him. He was looking for approval. Instead of approval, he found his neighbor, Jim Schofield, standing beside an elderly woman who Dave assumed must be Jim's visiting mother. And Jim didn't say anything, tried, in fact, to look away, but he was too late, and their eyes met. And Dave straightened himself out and said, "Turkey and the kids are at the food bank. I just brought Morley here so they could cook her up for me." "Oh," said Jim, "that explains everything." "I mean the turkey," said Dave. "I bring it here every year. I'm alone." Dave held his arms out as if he wanted Jim to frisk him. And the man at the desk said, "Excuse me, sir," and handed Dave his key. And Dave smiled at the man behind the counter, at Jim, at Jim's mother, and walked toward the elevator, one careful foot in front of the other. And when he got there, he heard Jim calling him, and Dave turned, and Jim said, "You forgot your chick," pointing to the turkey on the counter. The man on the phone from room service said, "But we have turkey on the menu, sir." And Dave said, "This is a special turkey. I was hoping you could cook my turkey." The man from room service told Dave the manager would call. Dave looked at his watch. And when the manager called, Dave knew this was his last and only chance. This man was going to either agree to cook his turkey, or he might just as well book the ticket to Newfoundland. "Excuse me, sir," said the manager. "I said I need to eat this particular turkey," said Dave. "That particular turkey, sir," said the manager. "Do you know," said Dave, "what they put in birds today?" "No, sir," said the manager. He said it like it was a question. "They feed them." Now, Dave had no idea what they fed them. He wasn't sure what he was going to go with this, just that he had to keep talking. "They feed them chemicals," he said, "and antibiotics and steroids and lard to make them juicier. I'm allergic to that stuff. If I eat any of that stuff, I'll have a heart attack or at least a seizure in the lobby of your hotel. Do you want that to happen?" The man on the phone didn't say anything, so Dave kept going. "I have my own turkey here. I raised this turkey myself. I butchered it myself. I butchered it this morning. The only thing this thing has eaten." Dave looked frantically around the room. What did he feed the turkey? "Tofu," he said triumphantly. "Tofu, sir," said the manager. "And yogurt," said Dave. It was all or nothing. The bellboy took the turkey, and Dave gave him $20 and said, "You have those big convection ovens?" He said, "I've got to have it back before 5:30. The bellboy was from Central America. All he said was, "You must be very hungry, sir." Dave collapsed onto the bed, didn't move for an hour and a half, which was when the phone rang. It was the manager. He said the turkey was in the oven. Then he said, "You raised that bird yourself?" It was a question. Dave said yes. There was a pause. The manager said, "The chef says the turkey looks like it was abused." Dave said, "Ask the chef if he's ever killed a turkey. Tell him it was a fighter. Tell him to stitch it up." The bellboy wheeled the turkey into Dave's room at 5:45. They had it on a dolly covered with a silver dome. Dave removed the dome and gasped. It didn't look like any bird he could have cooked. There were white paper armbands on both drumsticks and a glazed partridge made of red peppers on the breast. He looked at his watch and ripped the paper armbands off, and he scooped the red pepper partridge into his mouth, and then he realized the bellboy was watching him and saw the security guard standing in the corridor. The security guard was holding a carving knife. They obviously weren't about to trust Dave with a weapon. "Would you like us to carve it, sir?" "Just get me a taxi," said Dave. What? Said the guard. I can't eat this here, said Dave. I have to eat it. Dave couldn't imagine where he had to eat it. Outside, he said. Get outside. He took out another $20 bill and he gave it to the bellboy and he said, I'm going downstairs to check out. You bring the bird and get the taxi. And he walked by the security guard without looking at him and said, careful with that knife. And he got home at 6 o'clock and he put Butch on the table. The family was due back any minute and he poured himself a drink and he sat down in the living room and the house looked beautiful. It smelled beautiful. It's like a pine forest. My forest, said Dave. And then he said, uh-oh, and jumped up and got a ladle of turkey gravy and ran around the house smearing it on the light bulbs. You do what you've got to do. There, he thought. And he went outside and he stood on the stoop and he counted to 50 and he went back in and breathed in and the house smelled just like Christmas. And he poured himself another scotch and he looked out the window and he saw Morley coming up the walk with Jim Schofield and his mother. We met them outside and invited them in for a drink. I hope that's okay. Of course, said Dave. I'll go get the drinks. And he said, Morley, could you come here a moment, please? There's something I have to tell you. That was Dave Cooks the Turkey, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe CD called A Vinyl Cafe Christmas Concert. That story is also in the book, Home from the Vinyl Cafe. It was first on the Vinyl Cafe radio show in 1996. Back now even further, back to Montreal in 1966. These are Les Sultans.
Jeune fille, mais c'est une fille qui ne fait que des bêtises. Elle sait trop bien s'excuser, je ne sais quoi lui dire. Mais pour moi, elle est ma vie, je dois la subir. Oh, il n'y a rien au monde que je ne ferai pas pour cette fille. J'ai essayé de l'oublier par des années passées. Mais à quoi bon espérer, cela ne peut rien changer. Tant plus de temps, sa pensée reviendra me hanter. Car il n'y a rien au monde qui ne ferait pas pour cette vie. L'amour se porte plus fort encore que moi je me dis. Toutes les fois qu'elle me mentait au fond de moi je sentais. Une partie de mon cœur qui brillait de ses sentiers.
was a long-forgotten treasure from Montreal's Les Sultans. The track was Il n'y a rien au monde que je ne ferai pas pour cette fille. That was off Les Sultans' self-titled 1966 release. Well, it's time you've all been waiting for now.
It's time to announce the winner of this year's Vinyl Cafe Christmas contest. I got the postcard here in my hand. I'll tell you, it comes from a woman, and it comes from Western Canada. I'll let you know that much before I read it. Dear Stuart, here's the story of the worst gift that I've ever received. It was Valentine's Day of 1996, and I was in my third year of electrical engineering at the Royal Military College of Canada in Kingston. At that time, I was still a hopeless romantic, and I foolishly hoped for a great and superbly thoughtful gift from my partner. Flowers, poetry, or something that would certainly represent his undying love for me. I had cross-stitched an illustrated poem about how much I loved him. The gift I received in return was a book about vitamins. Yup, you read that correctly. Vitamins. I found it hard to believe that that was it, the symbol of his undying love. I suppose one could look at it in the sense that I would be a very healthy companion. Needless to say, I was crushed. Your devoted fan and this year's winner of the Vinyl Cafe Christmas Contest, Tanya Pendergast of Wainwright, Alberta. We're going to phone Tanya right now. I wonder if she's listening. Here we go.
Hello?
Tanya?
Yes?
Tanya, it's Stuart McLean speaking from CBC Radio.
Oh, my goodness. Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
I'm phoning to talk to you about the Christmas contest.
Oh, my.
You're a winner.
That's wonderful.
You're our grand winner.
Oh, my.
We're bringing you to Toronto, Tanya.
This could be interesting.
Why?
I'm pregnant. I'm due in February.
Are you taking your vitamins?
I am. Oh. Well.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What's the best part?
What, of being pregnant?
Yeah.
All the movement.
Inside you?
Yep.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it's really cool. It's like, I think it makes it much more real because you have this little person moving around inside you.
Mm.
You've created a little person. My husband finds it quite exciting because he can feel it now too. So.
Huh.
It's quite nice.
What's the worst part?
Not being able to sleep.
Because there's a little person moving around inside you.
Yes. It's kind of like a beached whale in bed.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's all good.
Do you think you can make it or not?
I don't think I'll be able to fly, but am I allowed to send my grandmother?
Your grandmother?
Yes.
She's in Wainwright, too?
No, she's in Cornerbrook, Newfoundland.
I guess you can. I don't know. I'd have to consult with the rule master. I am the rule master. We can do whatever we want, I guess. Sure you can send your grandmother instead of you.
Yes.
What's her name?
Enid Stevenson.
Tell me about Enid.
She's a wonderful one. She loves to garden. She's a transplanted a woman from England. She married my grandfather just before the war, and she's been in Cornerbrook, oh my goodness, a very long time.
Huh.
And she's a very interesting, very creative person, and I'm pretty sure she's a big fan of your show. So
you want me to phone, you're sure you want me to do this? You want me to phone your grandmother?
Absolutely.
You're sure about it?
I'm very sure, yes.
Okay, last chance. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to patch you. I don't want to put her number on the radio for everybody.
Okay.
So I'm going to patch you back to the control room.
Okay.
And would you just, you give Jess Milton there, the producer of the show, would you give her the number so she can dial?
Okay.
You can turn on the radio and listen, and I'll phone your grandmother, and you just give the number to them in the control room.
Okay.
Okay?
I will do that.
It was lovely talking to you.
You too, Stuart.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.
And to you too.
Okay, if you guys got the number there, if you guys can just dial.
Hello?
Enid?
Yes?
It's Stuart McLean speaking from CBC Radio.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know my show?
Oh, do I ever? Yes, I just love it.
Well, I'm delighted you do, but I tell you, you're probably wondering why I'm phoning you.
Well, I am. am.
Your granddaughter?
Tanya.
Pendergast?
Yes.
In Wainwright?
Yes.
She entered this year's Vinyl Cafe Christmas contest.
Really?
And she's our grand winner.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, how exciting.
It's going to get better, Enid. Because I just phoned Tanya in Wainwright.
I just love the way you laugh.
Well, I love the way that you laugh.
So, well, I know Tanya loves your program because we've often talked about it.
Huh. Well, she's the winner of the contest.
Well.
The prize is she gets to fly to Toronto to come to our Christmas concert.
Yes.
Well, she doesn't think she can come because she's going to be too big then.
Yes, yeah, she's due in the middle of February.
So she wants you to come instead.
Oh, good heavens! Oh, my! Really?
Yeah.
Oh! You sure you're not pulling my leg? I mean, I know it's your voice.
It is me, yeah.
Yes.
No, I'm not pulling your leg. This is the truth.
Oh, my gracious me. Well, oh, how overwhelming.
We want to fly you to Toronto. We want to put you up in a hotel. We want to give you tickets to come to our show.
Yes.
We want you to have dinner with us.
Oh, my. Well.
We're at Convocation Hall at the University of Toronto on December the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we'd like you to come to the Saturday night show, which is the show we're recording for the radio.
Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever been to Toronto?
Oh, many years ago, just once. And I remember going to the Pancake House in the Eaton Center.
Oh.
Long, long time ago. I don't know. My daughter's been there, Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently.
Well, I got an idea here. Why don't you bring Joyce with you? There's two tickets. Well, the two of you can come.
Oh! Oh, how gorgeous! Oh! Well, I can't believe it.
Well, believe it. You know what? I would like to... I'm going to phone Joyce and see if Joyce can come, if it's okay with her. And then... And it's okay with you, right? You're up for this? You can do this?
Well, I don't know. I've got two dogs, you know, and I'll have to see what I can do about them.
You can find someone to look after the dogs.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I mean, what are friends for?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my gracious.
You okay?
Yes, I'm fine. Well.
You're from England.
Yes.
You came here...
I'm a so-called war bride.
Huh.
I'm from Yorkshire.
And how's Newfoundland been to you?
Oh, good.
Yeah?
Oh, yes.
Must have been hard?
Well, in the beginning it was hard, you know. The houses were built for the veterans, and we had no water laid down and no telephones or anything, but things got better, and we had four children. Yeah, been great.
Well, you know what? We'll get you up on stage on Saturday night and introduce you to everybody in town.
Oh, my goodness. No.
We're going to show you a good time.
Well, thank you very, very much. I've heard the shows before, you know, when you've had winners on, but never dreamt that I would ever be there. Well.
Okay. Well, we'll give Joyce a call, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And your job now is to find somebody to look after those dogs.
Yes. Thank you so much for calling.
It's just so great. I just... Here we go again.
Oh, dear. But anyway, they say laughter's good for you.
I'll see you when you come to Toronto. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Now, I'm getting confused here. Tanya gave us Joyce's phone number, didn't she? Did she? Yeah, okay, can we get her on the line fast? Okay, here we go. Oh, dear. I hope she's home.
Come on, Joyce, be home.
Hello?
Joyce?
Yes?
Joyce, it's Stuart McLean speaking from CBC Radio.
Yes?
I have a show called The Vinyl Cafe.
Yes, I listen to it every Sunday.
You know it?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, I got a bit of a long story here. Tanya Pendergast.
Yes?
She's your...
niece.
And Tanya... sent a card into our Christmas contest this year.
Okay.
And she won.
Wow.
But she can't come.
Oh.
Because she's pregnant.
Yes.
So she wants her grandma, Enid, to come.
Yes.
That's your mom.
Yes.
And she also wants you to come, too, in her stead, to come with Enid.
Oh, my goodness.
So
where will this be?
Into Toronto.
Wow.
And I just got off the phone with your mom.
Yes?
She's a piece of business.
Oh, she's, yeah.
She's lovely.
Oh, she is, definitely.
I loved your mom.
Yes?
Well, she just got me laughing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah. She's a good head, I must say.
So, will you come to Toronto with her in the middle of December, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th?
I don't see why I can't.
We'll pay for it.
Very good. Sounds good to me.
So we'll get somebody from the office to phone you up, and you can decide when you want to come.
Fine.
And we'll get it all done up.
Thank you very much.
Is that okay?
You're lovely. Thank you. Look forward to meeting you.
Me too.
Yes.
Bye-bye, Joyce.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Joyce on the phone. Joyce and her mother, Enid, are coming to Toronto from Newfoundland to see the Vinyl Cafe Christmas show in a few weeks. We have a bunch of concerts coming up over the next few weeks. If you're listening on Saturday, we'll be at the Festival Theatre in Stratford on Saturday night. That's December the 4th. If this is Sunday afternoon, December the 5th, well, we have a matinee this afternoon at Hamilton Place. Next week, we'll be hitting the road again. The Vinyl Cafe will be heading for Kitchener and Belleville, Brockville, North Bay, Ottawa, Kingston, and Toronto. Speaking of Toronto, this is Toronto's ace violinist, Lenny Solomon, with Paganini Blues. And that's just about it for this week. Dave Amers, the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe, thanks this week to Anton Zadlow for the technical assistance. Meg Masters is the story producer of the Vinyl Cafe. Owen Pallett, the music producer. The Vinyl Cafe is produced by Jeff Milton. I'm Stuart McLean. So long for now.